What's going on, everybody? This is Black Men Sundays. I'm your host, Corey Sylvester Murray, and we're talking about generational wealth, finance, and business.
It's a Black Man Sunday. Time to put all childish things away. I refuse to be the man I was yesterday. Gotta put my best foot forward and elevate.
And on today's show, I have a treat for you. We are bringing back Dr. Herbert Harris. This is his third appearance on Black Men Sundays. And let's run down this brother's accolades. This brother's a Columbia University graduate, retired attorney, worked at Time Magazine. He's famously known as the author of the 12 Universal Laws of Success, which I've read that book numerous times. He has a new book called The Life Lessons for Your Success, Volume 1, Procrastination, Self-Doubt, Lack of Focus. And let me tell you, I listen to this brother every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and Saturdays at 8 in the morning on my Instagram page. That's when Instagram is acting correctly, because every now and then I'll say, Dr. Harris, I missed you this morning. I didn't see you on. He said I was on, but he brings it up. So without further ado, Dr. Herbert Harris, coming out of Wilmington, North Carolina. How you doing, brother? Welcome back to Black Men Sundays for your third ride.
Oh, man, thank you so much. It's my joy to be here, and I just salute what you're doing. It's so important that the message, the truth, information gets out on the airwaves, on the internet, online, so that people may know. You know, the scripture says the truth will set you free. Well, somebody's got to get that truth to the people to set them free. So I salute what you're doing and keep up the good work.
That's right. And you know what? I'm ready to get into it. I've been thinking about this interview all day. So let's get started. Like I said, you have your new book, The Life Lessons for Your Success, Volume 1, Procrastination, Self-Doubt, and Lack of Focus. So let's talk about the impetus of you writing this book. And let's just talk about the book in general.
Well, you know, Corey, I did 104 interviews of people. And the idea was, it was called Success Talk. And one of the things that I wanted to know was what was their experience in life. In other words, I went over some of their accomplishments, but I wanted to know what were the barriers, what were the things that were blocking them, that were holding them back, and then how they addressed them. How did you overcome procrastination? How did you overcome self-doubt? And so over that period of 104 interviews, I developed a total of 12 topics. And these are the first three, but 12 topics, things that really impact people and slow them down and keep them from doing what they need to do. I also, as a part of the book, which is something a little different, I included interviews with some of the folks that I met. So, for example, in volume one, and there are a total of four volumes. And in volume one, we have six contributors and people who did things in their own right, like Jay Clark, who was one of the first Black men to be admitted to the Electricians Union in New York City. You would think that would be a shoo-in because it's up north, but that's not true, man. The unions have always been rather tight in letting brothers into the union. And Tanya Debnam, who's a realtor and a banker, a lady who's been very much deeply into, financial planning for all people, but in particular, people of color, looking at some of the real estate statistics and how she had to learn how to navigate in the banking arena. Cassandra Henderson, one of the great coaches right now. So the point was that when you got other people's perspective, I'd ask them a question like, what's your greatest victory? And to hear a person say, well, my greatest victory was getting out of my own way, was realizing that my self-doubt was undermining me. I had more degrees than a thermometer, okay? But yet I was stuck. And so when we listen to how people handle that, that then grew into the topic and that focus area for the book. So The Life Lessons is that book to go to when you got a specific problem. When you say procrastination is knocking me out. Well, here you can go there and learn about how to overcome procrastination or even lack of focus. Right now, focus is a key point because whatever you focus on grows. But the downside is if you focus on nothing, nothing grows. So it's been a great journey, this book, and I see it as being a great companion to the 12 Universal Laws of Success to go in depth into some of the issues that block people from achieving their greatness.
Great, great information, man, because, you know, one thing I learned from you, procrastination is the killer of your dreams. Ooh, and I tell my mentees that at the Boys and Girls Clubs, I tell my mentees that at the New Journey Youth Center, like, listen, man, procrastination will kill your dreams. And I tell people, I'd rather lose the competition than lose the fear.
Woo. And that's something.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So let's talk about, let's go a little more depth in the book. I know we're going to have to read it. I know you ain't going to give us all the gems. So give us for the brothers and sisters listening, give us a gem out of that book that we can utilize in our lives, like right now.
Well, I'll tell you, if there's one thing that really undermines people and their efforts, it's procrastination. I mean, the other things are challenging, but procrastination is so powerful because a lot of times you don't notice it. You know, you just think everything is okay, that this is how it goes. One of the areas we covered in the book is, what are some of the characteristics of a procrastinator? We may not want to own up to being a procrastinator, but let's look at some characteristics and they might let us know. For example, a procrastinator is afraid to fail. You know, we can, many times we've attempted to do things and it didn't work out. And we tried again and it didn't work out. So we have a number of failures at our back. And then we start to develop a mindset that says, you know what? If I don't do it, then I can't fail. And so that's one of those signs of a procrastinator, afraid to fail. We often say little things like, well, I can't do it. Henry Ford said, if you believe you can or you believe you can't, you're right. And so when we say things like, I can't do it, you know, I don't have enough education, I don't have any experience, that's another way of just procrastinating because you have that mindset. I don't know where to start. Yeah, man, I want to write a book. I know I've had an incredible life. Things have happened to me. I've overcome a bad childhood. I've overcome an abusive relationship. I've overcome all kinds of life reversals. And yet, I'm not going forward. I'm not doing anything. So if you ever say that to yourself, man, I want to write a book. I just don't know where to start. You might be a procrastinator. And then the fourth key. Is to be waiting for the right time. That's the one that it doesn't seem like you're procrastinating. It seems like it's a good thing to do. It's like, as soon as I get my ducks in a row, you know, as soon as I get all my things lined up, I'm going to do it. Well, that's just a procrastinator, the procrastination voice coming through. I'm waiting for the right time. The right time never comes. So those are just some of the keys to help people realize, hey, if these are some of the actions that you're going through, if these are some of the things you're saying to yourself, then stop it because you're undermining your own success. You know, Corey, there's one more that it really sounds like a good thing. I know as a writer, when I was writing my first book, our first book was called How to Make Money in Music. This is written probably before you were born, 1978. And this was the old days when you submit two or three chapters and an outline and they gave you an advance. And then when you finished the book, you got the rest of the money. So sure enough, we had done three chapters and an outline and it's right there, right around Thanksgiving. And we know we got the rest of this money waiting for us. All we got to do is turn in the manuscript. And I kept, me, I had a writing partner, Lou. We kept going through, we want to write the perfect chapter. We want everything in the book to be perfect. And we realized that search for perfection was really another way of procrastinating. That let's finish it. You see, once you finish it, a book or a project, once you get to the finish line and you finish it, you can improve on it. And so then I said, you know what, Lou, we're going to define this book finished, turn it in, get our money, and then we may improve upon it. We can revisit it, look at it. But that search for perfection can be a way to make you never finish the job. It's not right. My book is not finished. My project is not finished. It's almost there. But the bottom line is, it's another signal of procrastination. So these are some of the things we want to point out that in interviewing people and in, even in our own life, these are some of the things that we saw that are tip-offs to people that they may be procrastinating and they need to take drastic action to change it.
Got you, man. Let's talk about, you know, brothers, dad, because I'm hearing these days, you know, I want to be an author. I have so much content. And I hear a lot of people say, you know what, I'm going to just use AI. I'm going to use ChatGPT to write my book for me. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on the process of book writing these days? And how accepting are you using AI with the assistance of book writing?
Well, there are a lot of people that use AI as the main event. AI is like anything else. It's like a tool. It's like Google on steroids. That's all. And so it is a great research tool. And that's all it is. It's a great research tool. What's happening now is that many people there, you can write a book in a week. You can write a book. I saw a guy says, I can write a book in 72 hours using AI. But that's not your book. Those are not your ideas. And I'll tell you what, you write a book using AI and you get on a program like this, you will be procrastinating not to be on programs because you didn't create it. You really don't know the content of the book. And you get on an interview and somebody starts asking you questions, you'll embarrass yourself. So I think AI is a tool, but as far as creating with AI, it's not authentic. It's kind of betraying your story. You know your story. You know your message. And the moment you start accepting, let AI write my story for me, I think you're going on dangerous ground of one, you won't understand the story yourself and you'll be hesitant to even go and speak on it. And speaking about it and doing interviews, that's the key to promoting your sales. And then two, that just as AI can create it, they have programs now that can detect AI. Okay. And so many of the platforms now are beginning to realize that, and you'll get certain type of, you know, like right now, even Amazon, they'll ask you, is any of the stuff created by AI? And, you know, most people are going to say no, and then they're going to like, no, they can run those diagnostics. And they can pretty much figure out what was done by AI. So it's really putting an authentic writer in, I'll say it's complicating life for authentic writers because I can see the market being flooded by a lot of AI generated stuff that really does not have an authentic foundation to it.
And that's great information. So, because I'm old school. I was born in, I was born in 79. So, you know, we came up through the, you know, if I had to send 100 emails, you sent them, literally, you sent 100 emails. It wasn't no, and that was before the listserv days, you know, before the group engine and all that stuff. So what tips would you give for brothers now that say, you know what, I want to write a book. I don't know where to start.
Well, one of the things to do is the moment you decide to write your book, start writing. Okay. And so don't worry about your level of skill. Don't worry about your writing ability. Start putting the words down. Now, sometimes you can dictate it. You know, there's so many programs now that you just say the words and it writes it up for you, especially using AI technology. And you get a recording to go with it. And so that is a way to get your story down. That you didn't write it, but you dictated it, and then you have something to work with. There's an upside and a downside to that. I find that when I write from dictation, I may do a lecture, and then I have the lecture recorded, and I decide to do the transcript, and I'm like, man, I'd like to make this into a little booklet. But then you'll find that you spend more time organizing and editing that if I just started out to write a book in the first place, or to write an article in the first place. Step number one, to try to get away from that dictation thing because it can steal your time. If you can get into a rhythm mode, in other words, you can't control inspiration, but you can control your time. And so as a writer, you may say, okay, how many hours a day do you want to devote to writing? Let's be reasonable. You got to make a living. You have a family. You have a job. You have other commitments. Say, all right, I want to write for 2 hours a day. Mm-hmm. Now, when do you want to write? If you don't schedule it, it will never get done. If you say, I'm going to write when I feel like it, you'll never feel like it. So make a commitment to set out a block of time to write, to schedule that time, and then three, be disciplined enough to sit there. So you say, well, I sat there for 3 days, man, for 2 hours. Nothing came to me. Uh-huh, fine. So what? You are priming the creative pump. You continue doing that, and I guarantee you, you may go through 4 or 5 days, nothing coming to you, but you continue along. Rarely do you go more than 3, 4, 5 days before it begins to come to you. After that first week, you'll get some ideas, and then you commit to write it down. No matter what it is, when the idea comes to you, don't say, I'll remember it. Write it down. Develop yourself a nice little layout, a notebook, so you can write everything in one place. Once you get into that rhythm, you create a habit for writing. One of my coaching clients and friends and mentees, Herman Taylor, I met Herman at a book signing in New York. Oh, man, I guess about three or four years ago. And he said he wanted to write a book. And I gave him the same advice. I said, man, schedule the time. He was working as a social worker. And so the only time he had was 5 o'clock in the morning. So he made the sacrifice to get up early at 5, and he would write from 5 to 7. Then he'd get dressed and go to work. Well, it took him a little while, but once he got into that rhythm of it, the book started to flow. And now, 3 years later, Herman's written 3 books. He's now keynote speaking because the book is just a way to let the world know that you understand what you're talking about. For the young writers, schedule your time, make a commitment, try to make some notes about what it is you want to write about, try to describe your book, describe your story, set a schedule to write, and then stick to it. 21 days, if you can do it for 21 days, I guarantee you, you'll be able to write books from now to the end of the planet.
And you're talking 2 hours a day, 21 days.
That's it, yeah. 2 hours a day. And even if 2 is too much, 1 hour. You see, I just did a talk called The Power of Showing Up, and that success loves structure. And so if you just set up a structure, if you want to be able to create, I'll call it a harmonic, a rhythm for success, then you schedule a time to do a particular act. If it's writing your book. If it's reading, you schedule that time. Don't be overly aggressive. It's better to say, look, let me sit down if I can just write for an hour, okay? And if I can do it at a certain time each day for 21 days, it's a wrap. You got it done. You don't have to worry. It will be done. You can give more time later, but if you can at least, the Bible says, if you're dutiful about small things, you'll be entrusted with big things. So set a schedule that you can do and then stick to it. Once you get into that rhythm, writing becomes it becomes a joy, not a chore. It becomes something you look forward to doing.
Oh, man, that's great information, man. And I want to take a transition, man, and ask you, so over the last 20 years, what's the most common obstacle that you've seen people, especially brothers and sisters, struggle with?
And there's so many different levels. You have the brothers who, for example, guys who've been to college, you know, gotten a decent education, coming into the corporate arena. I had a contract once with Lucent Technology years ago, and they were trying to understand, they were bringing in a lot of black engineers into the company. And after 3 or 4 years, the engineers were not progressing up the corporate ranks. And so for the young people who come in, you see, what is the great block? The great block often is lack of vision or buying into somebody else's vision. And so I met with and worked with a number of the young Black engineers. And one of the things I detected was that there was reluctance to go into a management position. And as I began to look, you know, the company never understood the challenge. But being a Black man in America who grew up through the segregation paradigm, in our minds as young Black men, we are not taught that people will listen to us, that we can be in a management position. And even, let's take it even down to that racial issue. We are not taught that white people will listen to us, that we can have more degrees than a thermometer. We are not taught that. Basically, we often taught the other thing, that they're not going to listen. Well, think about that, Corey. Look how many years they never had Black quarterbacks. Guys like Warren Moon. Moon had to go to Canada to work for a while. They didn't have Black quarterbacks because there was this paradigm that a Black man would not have the capacity to manage a football team as a quarterback. But then the other side of that paradigm is that white people would not accept his leadership. And so we, as young Black men in the corporate arena, have to get beyond that paradigm. What I've found, I've talked to guys like Richard Parsons, who was head of Time Warner. Many of us didn't even know there was a Black man that had been the head of Time Warner for many years. The fellow who was head of American Express. And when I talked to Richard, for example, one of the things he was sharing, that you have to be able to see yourself in that position. Don't run away from that thought that you can be a manager, you can be a vice president, you can see that. So that's one of a big obstacle to young people who are coming into the corporate arena, that they, one, don't see themselves as in a management capacity. And then second, to not have a vision. The thing that puzzled them at Lucent was, why didn't many of the young Black engineers want to go on and not just go into management, but go into like senior management? I'm a vice president of development, a vice president of, you know, science, investigations or research or something. And so to begin to see that vision of yourself on a management level, on a leadership level. So the issue is lack of vision. That's the thing that I think hampers a lot of our people coming into the corporate arena. Another thing you might say, outside of that corporate arena in the regular market, that a poor work ethic. That when you look at guys like Michael Jordan, he was a so-so basketball player in high school. He even got cut from the team. But his response was to work harder. And so for young people or anybody in a job environment, when stuff doesn't go the way you want it to, work harder. Is it going to pay off? Absolutely. You know? One of the things you'll find, it may not pay off in that environment. You may be working harder in a company that really does not appreciate you. But I guarantee you, if you put in that type of work ethic, somebody's going to see it. It's going to change your attitude about your self-value. And you'll go for another job now, another position. So when this company does not give you the opportunities to grow, now you can go somewhere else. So to really develop a strong work ethic that's based on discipline, vision, and persistence. Realizing that success doesn't come overnight, but neither does failure. So those are the kind of things, that work ethic, okay, lack of vision. And then just really, I'll say a third. The world is not fair. A person should be able to dress the way they want to dress, look the way they want to look, to operate in the job market, in the business arena. And that's not absolutely true. People will judge you based on their perception of you. And so, I mean, you can make it an issue. Nobody, you know, I don't say that anybody should just, you know, conform to other people's norms, but to understand the variables. So, for example, I choose to be suited and booted. So wherever I go, you're going to see me with a tie, in a suit or a sport jacket or a sweater or something like that. Why? Because people respond to me differently. Is it right or wrong? It's probably not right, but I don't want you choose your battles. As a young person, choose your battles. That's not a battle I want to fight. So let me just play the game on that battle. I want to fight the battle now that says I want to be vice president in charge of this, that, and the other. And I want you to pay me the same thing you pay the other guy, and maybe even a little more because I'm smarter than he is. I work harder than he did. I'll choose to fight that battle rather than I'm showing up in a jogging suit. And they don't say anything, but they just don't give me the job. So those are, I think, three things that are very functional that can help young people in negotiating, you know, success in different levels.
If someone isn't where they want to be financially, what percentage of that is it their fault?
If you're not where you want to be financially, I mean, there could be many reasons. It could be 100% their fault. You know, there are a lot of people that focus on short-term enjoyment rather than long-term security. And as long as you focus on short-term enjoyment, you're going to always be broke. You're never going to accumulate anything. And so if you're in a tough financial position, I'm going to take you to a little scripture now. When the prodigal son, after he'd lost all of his money, he's in the pig pen, somebody else's pig pen, feeding somebody else's pigs. And he says to himself, he says, in my father's house, and the father meaning God, the source, in my father's house, even the servants have food to eat. And then he made a decision. He said, I will arise and go to my father. The moment he went, he said, I'll arise and go to my father, the scripture says the father raced to meet him when he was a long way off. So what this says is if you're in a financial quicksand right now, where you got more month at the end of the money, where you have no financial plan, where everything is charged up, they say, where your take-home pay won't even get you home, then stop right there and say, okay, this is not working. What can I do to change it? Let me look at what other people have done to be successful. Let me do a checkup from the neck up. What's in my thinking that's creating this situation of lack from the heart down? What's in my feelings that might be blocking me? And so once you do that, then it's like, okay, step one, do a budget. If you don't know where your money's going, you'll never have anything. No matter how much money you make, it'll always go from you. So you need to stop and do a budget. Doesn't matter whose fault it is that you're broke, but what is important is right now you made a decision to no longer be that way and to change. So do a budget. Know where your money's coming from and where it's going. The moment you do that budget, now you're in a position to take control of your money, take control of your finances. So that's a step one, to know where your money's coming from and where it's going. Then the second is to now create a picture of the life you want to live. The Bible says where there's no vision, the people perish. If you are focused on immediate enjoyment and you have no idea that one day you're going to get old, you know, I just turned 82. And the guy says, man, Doc, why are you still working? Well, I'm like, I love what I do. Why would I stop? You should be watching TV. Why would I want to do that? Nothing I like worse than watching somebody else make money. Okay, let me put my efforts in the things I want to do. So for that person who right now is not having their financial, the rewards that they want to have, stop what you're doing. Don't continue. Do an analysis of your income and do a budget. Now, many of us have no idea how to do that. But one of the beauties of the AI and the internet is now you can say, hey, send me a budget form. Send me some information on how to budget, information on how to track my income. Now AI becomes a tool. But that's step one, to analyze where you're at, look at where you want to go, then analyze, develop a budget designed to take you there.
Exactly. So, man, hey, I'm going to ask you, enjoying yourself on Black Men Sundays, brother?
Always, brother, because you know, you're providing a service that right now, there's nothing in the equation. When I grew up, you actually had the Black Boy Scouts. You had the Girl Scouts. Your churches had classes. in public speaking and music teachers, and he had the 4-H to learn about farming and animals and things like that. And so we were creating young men. We knew the world was wrong. We knew the world was not fair. We knew you had to be twice as good to get paid half as much. But as adults then, we felt obligated to give you the tools to do that. You know, Malcolm X said something interesting. He said, like, why would you let your oppressor educate your children? And so when I look back now, I went to school in the 50s, okay? I went to school with JoJo McNeil, was one of the Greensboro Four who did the first sit-in at Woolworths in 1960. I attended the March on Washington in 1963. I was a college student. But what we had then, we had teachers in the segregated schools who were committed to helping us learn. And they jacked us up. They believed in us many times more than we believed in ourselves, because they understood the world outside was a hostile place. But where we are right now, Dr. King, and his shortly before he made his transition, was killed, he said, I have integrated my people into a burning house. So meaning that he had underestimated the level of racism and hatred in our country. And so now we are living it with 50 or 60 years of our children basically being educated in a system. And I'm painting with a broad brush. There are pockets. There are people like the 100 black men. There are people who are doing the best they can with what they have to do it with. But if we look at the systemic situation that many of our young people are educated in schools that don't care for them. I guarantee you to go to any school system and the number one dropout group and suspension group is black males. And think about this. A kid's doing halfway poorly in school already. And for some behavior issue, you send him home for a week, for 10 days. What's he going to do? He's going to get further behind. He's not going to be studying at home and getting his assignment. And so it's basically been a hostile environment. I read somewhere that they build prisons based on the number of kids in the third grade. It's that predictable. And so when you don't have a source of information that we had, when I was a child, you had teachers who said, hey, you can do better. We believe in you. I'm not going to accept your mediocre treatment. I mean, I only knew one kid that got suspended. And Hayward Fennell, Hayward got suspended. He was a bad boogie, okay? But the only one, and they got him straight, okay? He graduated, okay? So we have this gap now, and nobody's telling the young people the truth about their condition, but also truths about how they can now take responsibility and navigate this world that we're living in. The churches, and you know, the churches are doing what they can, but you don't see many young people in the churches anymore. The black colleges, now historically black colleges, so many of them are hanging by a shoestring. So what you're doing, Corey, is so critical, and you need to upscale it to 10x it, because this is the type of information that our young men and young women, and see, one of the paradigms is happening right now. We've been putting a lot of focus on saving the black young men, but I think we need to put more energy into helping the black young women navigate, because many of them are a little bit more, you know, girls mature faster than men, than boys, but many of them have a reality of children and whatnot they have to deal with. And so you have an audience there that really, really needs the information that you're sharing. So I take my hat off to you, man, and say, keep doing what you're doing, because somebody's got to tell the truth and somebody's got to tell people how to navigate the world that we're in.
Definitely, man. I appreciate that. For people that want to purchase your book, I know you have it on Amazon. Do you have it on another website as well?
Well, we have the 12 Universal Laws of Success is on, of course, our website, herbertharris.com. And so we have my personal business website, herbertharris.com. And then we have the Life Skill. You know, I'm CEO of the Life Skill Institute. That's a training division. And it's on the lifeskillinstitute.org. So it's on both of those. But the new stuff, you got to pick it up directly from Amazon. We're updating the website. It's going up on the Life Skill Institute website in the next day or two. So you can always get the 12 Universal Laws of Success, but the new book, The Life Lessons, is going to be, you can get it directly on Amazon right now, Herbert Harris, and you'll find it. But it'll be on the lifeskillinstitute.org website generally by Tuesday or Wednesday of this week. So I know that the lifeskillinstitute.org, all the books will be there. Plus, Corey, I didn't even tell you that I have a line of fiction books that we're publishing. It's Tales from the Outskirts of Life. It's a series of books that we're publishing. And they're on Amazon right now. This is one we published by a lady writer, Wanderella. This lady is a channel writer who is writing romance, sensual romance mysteries. And then we have a book that I wrote, one of those mysteries based on the my years in the legal profession, called A Tear for Ethan, about a court case. So we're doing a lot of stuff, man, because we want to make sure that people have sources of information. And, you know, of course, you know of our book, Solving the Race Issue in America, which gives a lot of the history on which some of the conclusions that I've been sharing is based. As a people, we are in probably the most challenging era that we've ever been in America right now. Because when I was a child, we had black businesses. We came out of the segregated era where black men had oil companies and gas companies and plumbing companies and electric companies because white people wouldn't work for black people. But now we're coming into an era where you don't have black plumbers, where most of the trade schools now, you know, they took the trades out of high school. You used to be able to get a decent education in high school in the trades area, at least good enough to get a job. They took the trades out of high school, so we have a whole generation of young people who don't know anything about electricity or mechanics or things like that. And so we don't have a labor market now of young people who know how to do stuff, you know, which is intentional. And so we have to take it upon ourselves to re-educate. You remember the book, The Miseducation of the Negro? Well, now we are experiencing the diseducation of the Negro. Wow. And it's going to be taking place on all levels. You look at so many of the public officials now. You know, you're going to see sort of a systematic attempt to undermine some of them. You know, and we had a city in North Carolina, had a black city manager, and the police and the others refused to work for her. So this is an era right now that is going to require a couple of things. One, that we who have some knowledge are going to have to be sharing that knowledge, you know, on a very systematic way. Two, that there's a spiritual transformation that takes place. When we have so many negative vibrations in the world, there are things that you have to approach on a different level. So right now, you know, we've been 8:30 every morning, we have a prayer for peace, 8:30 a.m. Eastern, that this prayer for peace, and this is peace is on all levels, not just, you know, war and peace, but peace where people are happy, people are fulfilled, that people can experience abundance and live a good life. And so to approach it on that area, on that level, that spiritual level. So we have a big job ahead of us, brother, but it's people like you that keep plugging, keep pushing, that give us hope that we can definitely get to the other side.
Definitely, man. And you know, whenever I hear you, I always say you can book a call. So for people that want to book a call, How can they do that?
Yes, well, go to herbertharris.com. You know, one of the things I'm looking for, Corey, I want to help more people write their books. I've been a number of professors now, people, and I'm not just looking for professors, but folks who've been in education who want to share their knowledge. So I'm in the publishing business. People who have a story about their lives, about their challenges and how they overcame their lives. And so I'm doing that, and I'm also doing more coaching. I'm finding there's a hunger out there for people who need life coaching, people who need author publishing coaching, people who need entrepreneurial coaching on their business. So all of those channels through my book a call site tab on herbertharris.com, www.herbertharris.com, and you'll see a tab, book a call. You can set up a call directly with me and speak directly with me and let me see what I can do or what we can do to help you move to the next level and transform your life exactly the way you want it to.
Gotcha, man. And I'm going to wrap this up with one final question. If you could only teach one principle from the universal laws of success, if you only could teach one, what would it be?
It would be the second law of success. And the second law of success says, be not conformed to this world. That's the scripture. That you don't have to stay stuck in whatever condition you're in, no matter what it is, no matter how dire, how bad, how black, how uncomfortable. It says, be not conformed to this world, but be you transformed by the renewing of your mind. That in your mind, you have the capacity to change your thinking. And so no matter what your condition, you can change that condition by changing your thinking. That's a great power. And just knowing that gives you the tools to, as the prodigal son, to get out of the pig pen of life. Like he said, I'm in the pig pen, but in my father's house, I will arise. I will change my thinking. And so that's the principle that I would teach. Don't stay stuck where you are. You already have the capacity to change your life by changing your thinking.
And you brought up a good point. Staying stuck, not staying stuck. So what separates people who overcome adversity from those who stay stuck?
I think the main thing is systematic application of a definite plan. Example, a person's 200 pounds overweight. Their heart is straining. Their blood pressure is up through the roof. They need all kinds of help. Say, well, they tried everything. Well, let's say, look, every day, just exercise for 20 minutes. Every day, whatever you're doing, just whatever you would normally eat, eat half of it. Now, you don't lose 50 pounds or 100 pounds that day, but over time, you will accomplish it. And so the people who face challenges and overcome them are those who realize it's not an overnight situation, that approach it almost like a 12-step program. Let me determine what I can do today, this day, that will move me a step closer to where I want to be tomorrow. All the other stuff may happen in my life, but let me identify one thing. Let me devote 5 minutes. Let me devote a half hour to me changing my life so that tomorrow will be the way I want it to be. And that's the difference. Those people who understand that realize that if they can just take one day at a time, whatever that challenge is, whatever that hole they're in, whatever that quicksand is, if they could just take one day at a time and get one step, that they get what you call the compound effect. It's like Einstein said, compound interest is like the eighth wonder of the world. You know, it creates billionaires. Well, compound effectiveness, that they say they have the vision to get out of the hole. They have the discipline to take it one step at a time, and they have the persistence to keep stepping. And you'll find, if you look over time, they always, you know, like examples, other type of examples. But if you look on a whole, that's the difference between the man who stays stuck and the person who grows through the stuck. and gets to the next level.
There it is. That wraps it up. Dr. Herbert Harris, man, it's been your third appearance on Black Men Sundays. Happy 82nd birthday, my brother. Many blessings to you. Like I said, I listen to you every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday at 8 a.m. when I'm waking up, letting my dogs out. I have you playing. So I appreciate you. I appreciate your support. I appreciate you believing in the movement. I just appreciate you being Dr. Herbert Harris, brother. So many blessings. Thanks for coming on Black Men Sundays. I appreciate you.
Thank you, my friend. You keep up your important work.
It's a Black Man Sunday. Time to put all childish things away.